Good evening, everybody. It's the Fatback Four. It's episode 13 on the weekend where Liverpool draw 1-1 with Chelsea at Anfield. Joining me this week is Grizz, is Matt, and myself, Gab, your host. We're missing somebody, and the person we're missing is Ian. It was Ian's birthday at the weekend. He believed that he was going to make it here tonight, but we, the three of us, didn't believe it for a second. His mates looked after him, brought him out, I think, on Friday, on Saturday as well. And as a special treat, he was brought to an Alexandra Burke tribute act in Liverpool, which sound, by the sounds of it, was brilliant. He just sent me a message this morning saying that his voice was gone, but OMG, best gig I've ever been at.
he sent me a voice note last night from the gig.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Love you, Alex Horn. Love you, Horn. Hey, Alex Horn.
I could just imagine Ian there.
Yeah, well, apparently he spent the day looking up Alexandra Burke's tour details to see when she's actually coming close, and he's going to go and see the real thing. But look, on with it. Liverpool won, Chelsea won. I don't think I'm ever going to get over that. Matt, I'll come to you first. The lineup caused a lot of issues, a lot of meltdowns on Twitter as usual. What did you think of it when you seen it come out?
Well, nothing we can do at the back, really. It was a bit weird leaving Bobby and Mane out up front. I didn't actually mind Sturridge being in, because we are rotating. We all moaned last year about how we all fucking fell apart in December, January, and we need to rotate. He's actually doing it now, so we can't really moan at him for doing it. But that midfield's dire, mate. You look at that. I mean, I looked at that, I just have no confidence whatsoever. Both of them, they're not mobile anymore. They're not good at defending. You can't have them two sitting in the two. The only thing scarier than Hendo sitting in the two is fucking Millie sitting next to him. And if I'm thinking that, you've got to get in the heads of what the opposition team and manager's thinking, and just think it's their lucky day, really. I do think Chelsea set up thinking we'd go with Mane and everyone, our full team. So they weren't expecting it, and they overloaded the midfield, and it just killed us, absolutely killed us, especially with Coutinho as well. I mean, you want him in every team, but he's going through a bit of a bad patch at the moment, isn't he? I don't know if he's down tools, or he does have these bad patches anyway, so I'm not jumping on the bandwagon that he's down tools just yet. I think he'll come out of it, because he does like to play footy, but with him in front of him and Ox in front of just Millie and Hendo sitting, it's a recipe for disaster. And they showed it. They ran through every 5 minutes. They were getting a run on our defence, like, and that's the worst thing you can do against fucking Ragnar Klavan. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Grizz, to me, it looked like, I think Matt's right. I think Chelsea set up for us coming full strength at them, and they set up in that way. They literally had, for me, two attacking players in the pitch, which was Hazard and Morata. We didn't go full strength, and it worked against us, even though Chelsea went very defensive in the way they looked. It did go against us in the end, because they did pack midfield, didn't they?
Yeah, I was just speaking to Matt off air, hence why he copied my thoughts again. But what I was saying, I actually think, I'm going to say it how I think. I actually think both managers kind of flopped, to be honest with you. You're spot on about Conte. That team was solely picked because Matt was saying, isn't that their normal setup? But no, it's not. He always plays another forward. Whether it, when I say a forward attack-minded player, whether it be from a wing-back area like a Moses, but obviously Moses is out, he picks a Willian, a Pedro, or a Fabregas. At least one other. He had none of them. As you said, he had Morata and Hazard attacking, and then the rest were just like the Great Wall of China, weren't they? They were just blocking us out everywhere. He thought we're going to go full strength. I thought we're going to go full strength. Everyone, I think, assumed. No one expected Bobby or Mane to be left out unless they were injured. And then they weren't. When we found out that they weren't injured, then it was a shock to the system. The midfield, the less said about it, the better, I think. It's going over you know, same thing again and again and again. How he thinks, or how he thought, a midfield of Moreno, what's his name? Milner, Hendo, and Phil, right? Probably our weakest in terms of strength, mobility, physicality, will handle probably one of the strongest midfields in Kante, Bakayoko physically, and Drinkwater. Well, he probably didn't expect Drinkwater. How he thought we're going to match up physically is beyond me, or even on a footballing level. I was astounded with the lineup. You know, I said to you guys, do you remember the WhatsApp group? I said, it's a tricky one, because I actually thought before the game, home game to Chelsea, if we go full strength, I'm looking at 3 points here. I was confident. I thought we're going to get a reaction from midweek. When we see the team lineups, I thought, I'm happy with the draw. I'll take a draw here. And I really meant that. But the way the game panned out with the last minute or the last 5 minutes, or that fluky goal, whatever, it's disappointing. And then you suddenly think, oh, we should have won. So it was a mixture of emotions. But team-wise, nobody expected Klopp to choose this match to rotate. I hear what you said, Matt. He is rotating, and yeah, I'm fully on board about that, and I do agree with that. But I really thought it would either been Seville or Stoke that would have been the match that he would have made a few changes. I didn't expect him to go, you know, so different in this game, probably, you know, as one of our direct rivals. I'm a bit disappointed.
Do you not think Seville is a more important game than this, though? Because before Sevilla, a lot of players played a lot of international minutes as well. And Mane was coming back from that injury. So out of the two games, what would you play strongest team against?
No, I don't think that, because I'll tell you why. Because the situation in the Champions League, in my opinion, would have been the same. It would have meant we needed to go to the home game needing a win against Spartak Moscow. Or CSK, whichever Moscow it is.
If you're already through, then you can rest your team against Moscow. Maybe that was the plan.
I'm assuming that was the plan. But you still don't go four changes. And those four changes were major changes, weren't they? Well, apart from the keeper. They were major changes. They weren't sort of your players that are on the peripheral, you know? Sort of your Milners for someone. They were like Bobby. I think everyone expected Bobby to start. Do you know what I mean? Mane, maybe you could have made a case for, because Ox has been in fairly good form. Mane coming back of an injury, that one would have made sense. But the Milner one absolutely threw me. And how many times have we discussed? You always pick Ginny at home. Whatever happens, you pick Ginny at home.
I'll tell you what. When I looked at the team, right? Now Klopp doesn't come out with this without criticism, and we'll get to that later. Not from me anyway. But when I looked at that team, Mignolet goes in because that's just the way he's doing things. I think he's wrong. I said it the other day. I just put Karius in goal at the end of the season. And if he proves himself, he proves himself. If he doesn't, it's another player you need at the end of this season. Mignolet is just, I'm sick talking about him. We're going to have to do it later on, but I'm sick talking about him. As Matt said, the back four, you can't really do anything with. Lovren goes out. I think we're in illness. Whatever. He plays Clavin and he plays Matip. Moreno stays in. I thought he might have come out, you know, with all the, you know, new child and all this sort of stuff. Mm. But the midfield for me, I think he kind of gets landed with it. And the reason for that is Henderson is fit. Jean, I don't think, trained for 2 days after the Sevilla game. Wijnaldum looked out on his feet at the end of the Sevilla game. Absolutely out on his feet. And I think he has to put Milner in there. With regards to Firmino, he's played nearly every minute for us, you know. It's a ridiculous amount of games he's played. It may have just been one game too far from. So I think he may have been landed with this team more than anything else, but the setup for me again,
I was gonna buy in because Gavin Nolan said. No, he's right. Because Gav, I remember saying, as soon as the team's got announced, I remember him saying in the WhatsApp, I think we're gonna go with two sitting. So if Klopp was forced, you're kind of saying, and I agree, listening to you, I get what you're saying. Like, sort of, with Emre not training, with Ginny sort of looking out on his feet. If he was going to pick Milner and Hendo, Gav, he should have gone with a different setup then. Because you cannot expect Hendo to be sort of... He went back to the old 4-3-3, didn't he? Sort of where Hendo, Milner and Phil in midfield.
I think he pushed Phil up a lot higher. Phil was not... Unless Phil wasn't doing his job.
But the point...
He wasn't sitting back. He wasn't sitting back at them too.
I think the reason Coutinho goes up a bit higher is because when you look at the three that are in midfield for Chelsea, Drinkwater, Kante and Bakayoko, they are three, let's be honest, that maybe Kante can do a bit, but they are three players that make your game really solid, and that risk of putting Coutinho up against them, you probably think isn't too much of a risk because these lads aren't going to do too much, but Chelsea were quite cute in what they done. They tried to just overpower us starting with Coutinho. I thought Coutinho was awful from start to finish, and I thought he was the same in Seville. I think he looks like a player that's caught between two stools. He doesn't know what way the system is going, and it seems to change week on week, and he doesn't know what part he has to play in it.
But he gets a free role in most systems anyway, so it shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, but a free role, Matt, in that system, you still need to be the third man in midfield, especially when they're crowding it like that. You still need to be walking back, you know. But look, we've... When you look at the team, a lot of people just went absolutely berserk. Before the ball is kicked, let's be honest about it, you know, watch the game and then have a feeling on it. But Jesus Christ, Twitter is just unbelievable. You know, from that hour before kickoff right up until thing, you'd swear that the club was you know, going to close down at half five or half seven or whatever time the game is over, the way people were going on. Look, I'll move on. The first half, Matt, what did you make of it? It was a bit scrappy for me. It was a bit, I don't know, kind of cancelling each other out. And again, because of the lineups, what both managers expected to happen, and it didn't happen. It seemed to nearly take that half, didn't it, for people to kind of find their feet and find out what they were doing.
Yeah, mate. It was nervous from both sides, which is generally how the games against Chelsea go, to be fair with us. But getting in a half-time at 0-0, it's a great opportunity. We saw the weaknesses in our team. We saw Hazard running through at the defence free as he wants. We saw all the parts we needed to change, and that's when, even if Genie needed a bit of a rest, that's when you bring him on. Because Milner's not tracking Hazard. No one's tracking their midfield runners, so you bring someone else on. So to get there 0-0, I was happy with. I mean, I don't care how we generally get results at the moment, especially against the big teams. If we can get in 0-0 at half-time against Chelsea, then I'm always confident that our attack will get us a goal at some point in the second half. So, yeah, went to plan. He wanted to set up a bit more solid, and that's exactly what we did. So I think it went to Klopp's plan. A bit boring, a bit scrappy, as you said. But it wasn't the worst thing in the world. Do you know what I mean? So I wasn't too arsed about that.
Yeah, because I think, like... We watch teams at Anfield this season, and like you say, they'll sit back, they'll try to take as much pressure as they can, and they know in the back of their heads we'll get a chance. But Grizz, Chelsea are a different animal, aren't they? They can sit back, but they have the quality to hit you as well. And like Matt said, I think not nil all at halftime is no bad thing, especially looking at the bench we have. I was happy enough at halftime with a nil all, were you?
I wasn't, no. I wasn't happy at all. Okay. No, I was nervous as fuck.
You were fuming.
You know, yeah, no, I tell you, come on, guys, you know I'm not a negative person, even though you lot are telling me, oh, fuck off, you negative piece of shit. But I'm not normally. No, I'm not. I expected us to win every home game normally, right? Because, you know, we're Liverpool and Anfield, and with our attack, you know, it's crowd roaring us on. But I actually was happy to come... Okay, I was happy to come in 0-0. I was happy to come in 0-0, but I was relieved. It was more relief, happy kind of thing. I wasn't happy with the performance. Wasn't happy with the setup. There was no lack of effort, but you expect that, okay? There was no lack of effort. We did. We really, you know, everyone was working hard. You could see Henderson, Moreno, all these guys actually putting in really, really good effort. But there was a severe, proper lack of quality. There was a lack of quality all over the pitch. Again, Studge, we've discussed this millions of times. If he's going to play Studge, why fucking play him on his top, up on his own top against three fucking balls of defenders? You know, I was having a laugh with, I think, I can't remember who it was. I was saying, look, they were saying, I said, I'll be happy if Studge gets more than 10, 15 touches, you know, in the game. Because that kind of game, that kind of setup is just not right for Studge. Ox tried hard, not much quality. Again, the only shining light in that first half was, you know, our Egyptian Messi. I mean, you know, he was the only shining light for me in that first half. Gav, I was every time, and again, I think Conte flopped as well, because I hate saying this, but I firmly believe if Conte played another attacker, I saw them winning that game.
Yeah, I think if Conte goes with Fabregas instead of, say,
I see
Greg
them winning that game. I see them winning. Because you got to remember
the way it's panned out. Yeah, I'd agree.
Because on the 45 minutes, what we tried to do, totally opposite of Seville, what we tried to do, we tried to play up, because and we usually play like this at home. We pushed up for 20 yards. We played a lot of them on the offside. If you notice, Morata and Hazard were caught offside quite a bit because we pushed up. Fabregas gets on that ball. Luckily, they didn't have anyone with any vision in midfield to put them through. But as soon as Fabregas, did you notice, as soon as Fabregas came on, they were slicing through with those passes through to us. I think Conte missed a massive trick. He didn't expect us to pick that team. If he knew beforehand, you know, that's the lineup they're going to pick, he would have picked an extra striker. And I said, we were not, you know, we were getting overridden midfield. Hazard is a joy. You know, I know, you know, we're talking to him, he's a joy to watch. The guy who was in the commentary that said, it's not the problem. There's two problems with Hazard. Is one's trying to stop the ball from getting to him. That's a problem because he moves around really cleverly. And second, when he gets the ball, that's when it becomes even more difficult. Because one-on-one, he's just fantastic. He really is elite when it comes to sort of drifting past players with ease. I think he's actually, if not quicker, as quick as Salah with the ball. You know, he's absolutely electric. And we saw that. You know, Henderson's no... You know, not very difficult these days, but the way he just drifted past on midfield, it was quite embarrassing, you know, watching Klavan and Hendo and Milner trying to sort of chase shadows. And that's where I think, and then I was thinking in my head, what could we do? And I was thinking, who could we have got to stop him? And Matt's right, the only person I could think of is Gini, probably, to go toe-to-toe with him, put Gini on him and put him out of the game, because that was the only threat, but he was such a threat. Every time I got the ball, I shit myself. I thought 0-0 halftime. Klopp's got to change this. That was my thinking going into halftime.
Yeah, everyone thought it, didn't they? Everyone on Twitter was saying it. Like, it was so glaringly obvious. I mean, it was just a massive gap between midfield and defence. It wasn't so much that no one was picking them up. No one was in the area to pick them up. You know what I mean? Everyone was just looking forward, looking to run out and press that, like Drinkwater or Kante, one of them. They just didn't pick. Hazard was sitting perfectly where Coutinho should be sitting. Just that little gap in between. And once he's got it in front of like Klavan or anything, we're just shitting our pants, aren't we? Especially
even if we were covering the areas, Matt, because there was times where we were kind of covering that area. I just don't think anyone was physically good enough, strong enough, quick enough, fast enough to actually stop him. I mean, Milner Henderson sort of fronted him up a couple of times. He just kept breezing past them. It was honestly, it was like boys against men. It was at times with him. At times,
it's one of Gini's biggest attributes that goes unnoticed, I think, his defensive positioning. Whereas a lot of our players, especially the players that played at the weekend,
and his strength. Matt,
he's strong. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He can put a tackle in. But a lot of our players who played on the weekend are very reactionary when it comes to defending, whereas the see ball, chase ball, that type of defending, if you know what I mean, and they'll run all day and do that all day, but against the Hazard player, that's not good enough.
At one stage I was thinking Moreno.
I forgot I was on a pod here for a minute. Go on.
I was thinking Moreno could have gone toe-to-toe with him, kept up with him pace-wise, little niggly tackles, you know. I thought put Moreno on him at one stage.
Yeah, but again, still he's still very Moreno. A lot of people say it. He's not defensively that clever. Again, someone gets past him and you chase him down. He's great at that. You don't want that. You need someone knowing where he's going to be or predicting where he's going to be and sitting in the space 5 yards in front of him, which I think Gini is very good at. He's proactive in his defence. It's what Mascherano used to do a lot. It's what the good deep-lying midfielders do. We don't have anyone in that two I'm not including Coutinho in that too because he wasn't in it. But we none of Hendo or Milner does that. They run all day and they run after him all day. But that wasn't enough, and we saw that in the first half. It wasn't enough. That's why it needed changing. Gini does that, but I think.
When halftime comes, lads, I'm thinking, and again, going on this kind of tangent that we're on, I think both managers, although trying to double or guess each other at the start, again, tried to do it at halftime without being in any way positive about it. For me, if Chelsea decide, okay, look, the three in our midfield is handling everything fine, Hazard is finding them gaps. And again, they're doing this where they put a player in around Henderson and they pop it to him and he plays around them. And it's one of the most simplest tactics any opposition can do against Liverpool at this time. For me, I see it all the time and it really frustrates me. For me, though, if he takes Fabregas and he puts Fabregas in for I can say, Bakayoko, he gets another person in there to occupy, whether it be Milner or Henderson, and I think they could go on and win the game. For Klopp, yeah, he does need more in midfield, but he needs... Coutinho, for me, wasn't doing enough, and Sturridge wasn't doing enough, so it was right through the middle of the team. We weren't holding the ball enough. He could have went a bit more positive a bit earlier, but they don't. Look, Chelsea are probably looking at it thinking we can still hold out here and grab ourselves a goal. But I think it's 64 minutes comes and Salah turns up again and scores again. And Grizz, I come to you first. Is this fella ever going to stop scoring goals?
He'll have a dip, but it won't last long because, you know, as we've discussed millions of times, he's that clever. He's that, his off the ball movement is absolute top notch. His finishing, we all know, can be improved, which is scary, which is absolutely scary, because if his finishing improves, we're talking Cristiano Ronaldo levels when he was at United, when he scored, 47, Matt, or something like that, wasn't it? 47 goals in a season or something like that. Crazy levels.
Clue. Matt's still drunk, you man. Can't.
No, you fucking asking me for your test.
Because you're the man with a laptop. You're on Michael Edwards. You're sitting in front of a laptop. You're the one who's doing all the...
You want me to Google
I know what you do. I know what you do because you don't know fuck all about anything else. What you do, as me and Gav chat, you Google away. So I know you find out these things. So that's why I said 47 goals. I think Cristiano Ronaldo scored something like that in the season. But we're looking at Salah. Look, Salah's looking at that kind of level of goals. Again, just his movement in off the ball. I think a lot of people haven't noticed or didn't notice Ox's really vital little touch. Because Phil plays the 1-2, doesn't he? And sort of Bakayoko gets a foot to it. But then Ox sort of puts it directly, just guides it, sort of gets a toe into it. And it just falls right into Salah's path. And very unusual for him. Finishes it absolutely calmly on his right foot. I think that even that sort of startles Courtois. He didn't expect him to just tuck it away slowly on his... You know, usually when it comes on your swinger... You actually try to just sort of take a lash at it, don't you? But yeah, he was very calm. He very calmly just slotted it. And I was just over the moon. I thought, come on, fucking Liverpool. Show some mettle here and see this out. Because this is crucial, crucial 3 points. Because Matt's right. Sometimes you don't give a shit how you get these wins against the top six. How many times have we seen when big teams play each other? It's small margins. There's not many chances in a game. It's like sort of a scrappy goal here and there. You know, it was a kind of scrappy goal because it was like sort of off Bakayoko, intercepts it, falls into his path. I thought, hold on to this win. Hold on to this win. I was really, really eager to see how we're going to hold on to this win or how we're going to set up afterwards as soon as we've scored.
The thing about the thing that really popped out of me up for it was, yeah, Oxlade-Chamberlain gets a nice touch on it. It's a decent bit of football. Which are right, he takes on his right foot, and I think Courtois thinks straight away he's having a lash at this and it's going across me rather than you know, down to his left hand side. But it's a really, really cool finish. Matt, almost immediately after the goal, I think Sturridge has taken off, and Wijnaldum comes on then. And it was a strange one for me because with a game that's stretched, you know, up to that Salah goal, the way it was playing out, you're probably right, it probably needed a Wijnaldum in there to be physical and match runs and stuff like that. But with Liverpool's intention, and it was a clear intention, Wijnaldum was the man that was needed. I think we could have filled enough spaces with the players that were there. I think he should have went for a Mane or a Firmino, you know, to do them on the break, because they are going to push on and you're going to see the likes of William Fabregas and whoever else comes on. Did you like the Gini and Aldum change, or would you have went something different and decided if we're dropping, we'd hit them on the break?
Well, first of all, it was 42 goals, Grizzo. I got it on my laptop. Close. For you. The change, bringing Gini on, it's not actually, I didn't think it was the worst change. It's just who we brought him on for, do you know what I mean? Bringing Studge on. It should have been Milner, in my eyes. Still, bringing him on was still the right thing to do. As long as you move people, the players around like you should. So, which he did, pushing him back. Obviously, Salah went more central up front. Coutinho pushed forward a little bit. And we had the three sitting there, which we needed to sit there. So, I don't actually think it was too bad a change. It was the changes after that, which were the worry. There should have been Manny on sooner because they were pushing us back. So if we have them two absolute rapid bastards sitting there waiting for the break, then they are going to be thinking a bit more defensive when they come forward. Because we didn't. We just had Salah. They could put two on him or the three at the back, which they have, and just sit there and attack at will, which was that was the main issue. It wasn't that Gini came on. It was the lack of players after Gini that didn't come on, which I think was the main issue.
Yeah, the Salah or Mane and Lallana come on the 88 or 89th minute, which I thought was fucking madness, you know, especially after the goal being conceded. All right, he's putting them on to try to get a goal back, but or get a winner. But he could have done this on 75, you know. He could have put them on there and said, right, we are going to sit deep, but Lallana is intelligent, he holds on to it. Mane is quick, Salah's on the pitch, you know. It would have served us better. But look, we have to get to it, and it's the equaliser. Matt, I'll stay with you. Two things. The defending for it, and the giving away the ball, and Mignolet's part in it. I just want your thoughts on them, just them two things about it.
Yeah. To be fair on the defending, he could have got closer to close him down. But you think he's going for the cross there, so whatever he's doing, you can't really block that from the position. You don't think the ball's going to go in. So he's covering half of the goal. The problem is, for me, Mignolet is out of the six-yard box. He's too far over left and he's too far out. So he's covering the goal himself, of the bit of the goal which was being covered by the defender anyway. So he should be further in, expecting a cross to come for it. But he's not. He's expecting a shot for some reason. He's outside the box, isn't he? And he's got a defender in front of him, so I don't know why he is where he is. Now, I've had a look at it a few times. I don't know if I can blame Mignolet for the goal, because it's tough to know. He's kind of long. He's like on the front foot. He's not expecting it to go in. It's a massive fluke from Willian. But where he is, he's not going to stop a header either if it does get crossed. But what I do know is, if the keeper could have got to it, our keeper would not have got to it. If there was a chance of that being saved, Mignolet would not have saved it. It's going in anyway. That's all I think on the situation.
Grizz, what do you make of it?
It's a difficult one. My initial reaction was poor keeping. Got told off by loads of people on Twitter for having that opinion. But after looking at it and analysing it again, even though I don't think none of us are expert goalkeepers, but speaking to a couple of mates who are sort of goalkeeping coaches, whatever, blah blah blah,
he's not your friend.
Again, it's 50. It's actually 50-50. You know that it's very difficult. Some people are saying, and I've done a little poll. And we're up to about 2,000 votes. And guess what the percentage is for either it's his error or not? It's 49% say no and 51% say yes, it was his fault. So it is literally people aren't decided whether it's fault. Look, I spoke to Phil as well, from the Trippers, who claims to be a goalkeeping coach or goalkeeping expert as well. And he agrees, and he often tells us about Mignolet's positioning off his line. As Matt says, he doesn't read the situation very well. Sorry, situations very well. You know, how many times have we criticized when sort of he needs to come off his line quicker and he doesn't come off his line quicker? He doesn't anticipate. He doesn't have the anticipation of a carrier's. He may have other attributes, i.e. shot stopping, that are better than carrier's. But sort of carrier's is like a cat, isn't he? Sort of, and you expect most of the modern keepers, modern day keepers, have this level of anticipation about them, which Arwan unfortunately lacks. And again, as Matt says, for some reason, as Willian's going on the outside, he's for some reason is expecting a shot rather than we all, I think, watching the game, knew that this is getting chipped to the back post. And that was his intention. Fuck what Willian says. He's not no Ronaldinho.
Did he claim it?
Yeah, he tried to claim it.
Fuck.
He tried to claim it afterwards.
There's no way he means it, right? And
no, there's no way he means it. Yeah.
the thing is, go on, Grizz. I'll let you finish. Go on.
No, but I was saying, Gav, from our, where we were sitting, from everyone watching that game, we know that's getting chipped to the back post, right? And again, in my opinion, Mignolet's too close to his line. He needs to be. Matt, honestly, there's screenshots going around.
He's just inside the six-yard box again.
And a lot of people are saying, how goalkeepers are taught in this day and age to go for that type of ball is with sort of, so it's going over your right shoulder. You're asked to sort of go with your left hand because apparently it cuts out the angle or something. I mean, I'm a bit of an old school. I thought if you go with your right hand in that situation, you kind of, it's more extended, isn't it? You get more chance of tipping it over. So I thought he went with his wrong hand. I definitely think he could have shifted his feet quicker, which was my biggest gripe about him. So his starting position, in my opinion, and according to a couple of goalkeeping coaches I spoke to, said his starting position is poor.
They're undecided
whether he goes with the right hand or the left hand. You know, they say different keepers are more comfortable. You know, wherever the keeper's comfortable, they go with that hand. But I definitely think the third aspect of it, he could have definitely moved his feet quicker.
I've just had a look. Yeah, you're right. He's further back than I thought. I was drunk when I watched it.
We're all meant to
gasp and fucking, you know. Yeah, like, that's a surprise there.
But yeah, I still think his position is bad anyway, so fuck him.
That's when you see, Grizz, you're talking about Gomer's right hand, Gomer's left hand. That's all down. That's all comes apparent because of the original problem, and which is the position. And I'm no goalkeeping coach, but when I watched it in real time and the ball went in the net, I thought, do you know what, you jammy fuck. You've gone for a cross. You've probably mishit it. It's looped in, right? Excuse me. But I go back and watch it again. And as he's moving across diagonally with the ball, Mignolet is, for me, he's too close to his near post. Okay? And I think he's probably one step too far out. But the biggest thing for me is watch his feet. I don't think, if William manages to pull out across along the six-yard box there, I don't think Mignolet makes it. I think he's too flat-footed. I think if he shoots at the near post, I think Mignolet makes it. But I think if he's maybe a step to his right-hand side, I still think he covers that shot.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sorry. He still makes that shot. If he's a step to his right, he still makes that shot, which I don't think is nearly possible the angle he's at to take that shot. But for me, then, when the ball is looped, is you're right. I think it's the way he moves his feet is atrocious. I think if he takes one step back before he makes that dive, I think he comfortably tips it over the bar. I think if he moves his feet really quickly, maybe one and a half, two steps, he's nearly catching it. That's being honest with you. And he's flat-footed, and I don't.
But that's positioning again. That yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
Gav,
yeah, yeah. It is. I'm not really mad about talking about him because I don't like him. I don't like him. I don't trust him. I think he's bang average, and I think it's being shown to be bang average. And for me, when I watched that goal back, I just thought, Jesus, if you're one step to your right and you're on your toes, because he looked really flat, I think he covers across. But again, one, two steps back really quickly, and he either touches that over or close to catching it.
If that's De Gea, Grizz's Paul is nowhere near that close. It's because it's Mignolet, everyone thinks, fuck it, he's shite. We've seen this over and over again. It's everything you're saying, Gav. You hate the fucker, and I know it, because you say every week you're fed up about talking about him. If that's De Gea or anyone or Courtois or someone else, they all say, it's a lucky goal, he couldn't have got to it. Because it's him, everyone's doubting, could he? What's he doing here? And you end up overanalyzing. And that's
Matt, hold on. Let me just say this before you go on.
What I'm saying is, Matt,
if Willian loops that ball and De Gea or Courtois or any of these top goalkeepers in goal, right, and they move their feet 1, 2, 3 steps and they go full stretch and it goes into the top corner, you go, do you know what? It's gone right in the fucking top corner, and he's moved his feet really quickly, and you know, he's got really close to it. Mignolet is standing with his hands out in front of him, and he's nearly planted to the ground when that ball is hit. Right? So to get any kind of movement to his right-hand side and backwards at the same time is nigh on impossible. And that's the problem. Forget the dive. Forget how close he gets to it. If he's a foot to his right-hand side and he moves his feet 50% or 30% quicker, he claims that ball, in my opinion.
Trust the Irishman to want fucking Michael Flatley in goal, like.
No, I
agree with you.
I'm not neutral.
I'm not disagreeing here. I absolutely agree with you. And I think the same thing as you. Because it's Mignolet, I'm looking at why it's his fault. I'm not looking why it's a jammy fucking goal. And that's because we're still playing fucking Mignolet in goal. That's why we're still talking about it. That's what I'm saying. If it was anyone else, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
Look,
if it was anyone else, Matt, that game ends 1-0.
No, Gav, that's a bit harsh, all right?
No, it's not, Grizz. And I'll tell you why. Grizz, because we're standing here, right, and we're questioning his positioning. We're questioning his positioning from his line. We're questioning his positioning to his near post. We're questioning how ready he is for a loop ball or B, a cross. Okay, so if his argument is, I was expecting a cross, he's not getting to that cross, Grizz.
But look, if it's any other keeper, all right, we're not analysing it as much.
Yeah.
But I refute that as well, Matt. I'm going to be in the middle. What I will say is, if it's any other top 4 or 5 keepers or team's keeper, then we are not discussing it because it's not a goal.
The Gea says that 11 times out of 10.
Right. So the point is, because people are saying, look, every time there's a goal scored, it doesn't mean there's a scapegoat. We don't have to make a scapegoat of every goal conceded, like we tend to do on Twitter, like a lot of people tend to do. So we're not, I'm trying not to make a scapegoat of Lovren. Look at that. Just on tip of our tongue, isn't it? I'm trying not to make a scapegoat of Mignolet. But look, if that happens against any of the top keepers, you have to analyze it. Because how often do you score goals like that? Very, very rarely do you see a goal looped in. You see it from the other angle where sort of it's whipped in and the defenders are going for it. Do you know when that's like whipped in swinging and the keeper doesn't know whether to come to go for it? They're expecting a defender to sort of header it away. But this type of goal where it's just drifting, and you've got to remember, he didn't really drill it across. He kind of just looped it across, Matt. And in my opinion, the keeper has sufficient time. As Gav says, he's in the wrong position at the start. He's too close to his goal line. He needs to be more active. He needs to anticipate things quicker. And I think in the second part of it is he needs to move his feet quicker to sort of, he has enough time for it to see the trajectory, judge it and tip it over. Because you've got to remember, he's a big lad, Simon Mignolet. He's not a small keeper. I mean, Lloris, quick on his feet, saves it. De Gea definitely saves it. Courtois definitely saves it. You know, that's the way you've got to look at it. Even Peter Cech, you know, the top 4 or 5 keepers save that. And that's the standard we've got to look at.
I don't disagree, mate. I'm just saying, if they're in goal and it goes in, this conversation isn't really happening. It's just, it's a fluke. That's my issue. Because we've got a massive cunt in goal. That's the reason.
Yeah, but Matt, we're only calling it a fluke because it went in. And this is the point I'm trying to make. If he's... you've said you've gone back and watched it. Just watch his feet as Willian is probably, before Willian even kicks it, watch his feet. He's setting himself for either a shot at the near post or an underhit cross towards the middle. He wants that cross straight at him, or he wants that shot to his left-hand side that he's covering himself for. Other goalkeepers, in my opinion, are a foot to the right because they'll still get across to their left-hand side. And because of
I think Karius saves that. I think Karius saves that, definitely. I'll tell you what, because Karius will be more positive of his line, and he's definitely quicker off his feet with his feet. I think Karius tips that over, even though he's shorter than Mignolet, isn't he?
Only just, like.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I'm stood next to still, both. He's not too far.
I'm bashing the fella, and I try not bash the fella, but for me, it's not completely his fault, but he has his part to play in it, and it's his presumption that he's going to go to his near post, or he's going to get this cross, which I don't think he's getting to. I think if that ball goes across the six-yard box, and Morata, or whoever's in the middle, I can't even remember even who's in the middle, whoever's in there, I don't think Mignolet gets to that. I think he's too flat-footed, and I think it's flashed past him before he even get there. He's too close to his near post. But look, we'll bash him again next week, or somebody else. I promise I'll try not to. Lads, we've made it, the subs come on very late, and a few bits was made about Mane, and after the game he was upset. Klopp has come out and said it was more a positional thing than the timing of it. And we've touched on it as well about bringing them on earlier, but Matt, just a final word on the substitutions. It was kind of, you know, a bit of desperation, wasn't it? And he had to put them on because Chelsea scored, rather than being a bit proactive maybe 10 minutes earlier to shut out the game or go on and win it probably 2 or 3.
Yeah, it was fucking pointless. I said it before, 89 minutes, absolutely pointless. I know the goal didn't go into about 84, 85, so he's just, he's reacting to that, but you could see it coming. That was the thing. We were unlucky to draw it. We were. At the end of the day, you look at it, we were unlucky because it was a fucking fluke. But you could see something was coming. Whether it was a good goal or a fluke goal, you could see something was coming. Everyone could see it. And I don't really like questioning Klopp. Not just because I love him, but he knows fucking a lot more than I do. So it's all in hindsight here. At the end of the day, that's all we can do it on. But you've got to... everyone on Twitter was saying we need to get someone on, because the same as the first half, they were just running through us, absolutely running through us. I mean, I thought Clavin actually did all right, considering, because you got Hazard running at you all game, and he's not the most mobile, is he? I thought he'd done all right. But we needed something more in that midfield, or something more in attack, as I said before, to get Chelsea thinking, oh, we can't go gung-ho here, because they've got fucking Salah and Mane sitting on the outside of our defenders, like. So we needed something, anything, because it was getting worse and worse. As I said, we all knew what was coming. Like, it was annoying. It was really annoying the way it happened so late.
Mane and Lallana for me are the changes to be made, but it's just the timing of them. It's a bit, oh fuck, we've conceded, I'll throw them on for the last 5 minutes and, you know, hope for the best. Because Lallana comes on, already, he's been out for a long while, but the one thing Lallana will do is he will keep the ball for you. He'll keep it, he'll move it, he'll chase players, he'll hurry them, he'll do all that. And Mane is there. You know what Mane is going to do. If you can get him up the pitch somewhere close to Salah, and you can get a ball to either of them, they have the pace and the power and the intelligence to play through. But Grizz, do you think it was just a bit of an act of desperation, or again, the Klopp kind of, he was a bit too, not negative, but he was a bit, you know, hesitant to do this after 75 or even 80 minutes. He just thought we can see this out. I just hope to God we can see it out, and that was his plan.
Yeah, look, I'm like Matt in terms of, I hate criticising Klopp. I hate criticising a manager who's, you know, won things at the highest level. The man knows, you know, millions more times than us what we know about football. But the thing is, right, in my opinion, and at the end of the day, look, people say you can't criticise or you should be able to criticise. It is what it is. After a match, I don't like sort of preempting people's thoughts, whatever, but after the match, we're allowed to give an opinion on, you know, what we've seen. And he claimed, Klopp afterwards in the press, or I think when he was asked, that he wanted to sort of go with five at the back when he wanted to make those changes. He said, our plan was to go five at the back. Now, for me, hate as much as you want, but a Conte, a Mourinho, sees that game out. He sees that game out in terms of when we scored that goal, our attack is still not fluid. It wasn't fluid. But what he could have done was, when did we score? What, 20 minutes to go or something? 25 minutes to go or something?
65 minutes it was, yeah.
So 25 minutes to go, you shut the fucking shop.
That's good maths for you, mate.
I worked it out quick, boy.
Did you have it down on a piece of paper, yeah?
He's a fucking abacus beside him.
He's been building up to this all fucking part, hasn't he?
65, 25, 90 minutes, bang on, mate. But listen, for me, and it's, again, hindsight, we lock up shop. You see, you judge your opponents, you look at the opponents. Look, there's times to use your attack as a form of defense, right? There's not only a time, there's place, and you look at the opposition that you're playing against to use your attack as a weapon. What Conte done, as soon as he scored, Conte brought on the artillery, didn't he? He brought on all the forwards, whatever. We were still playing Milner, and we still had Milner, Phil, and Hendo in midfield. I could not believe what I was seeing. He brought on Ginny, but again, I disagree. I think it was the wrong time. I don't think he should have brought off... Sturridge was the right man to come off, but I don't think that was the right move to bring on Salah through the middle. He should have, he should have made a triple situation, a double substitution, not a single substitution. I would have gone like for like with them. They were getting plenty of that Alonso chap on the left was getting plenty of the ball. What Conte done was take off his right wing back and brought on Pedro to play there. You know, me personally, I would have gone three at the back, tucked in Gomez. You know, it's hindsight, but I think he should have been far more. And I wanted to see this side to him, but he could have just persisted with sort of bringing in Ginny. But by then, Milner and Hendo were, honest to God, were just walking through quicksand, weren't they? They were just, and it was the same. We were in position. I do actually think we were in positions, but we just couldn't stop them. They were just too quick. You could see it. We were just dropping deeper and deeper and deeper. Opposite to the first half. I thought we were going to learn from Seville. We pushed up in the first half. We caught them offside so many times. But it's, I mean, everyone talks about it's a natural instinct to sort of drop. When you're defending a goal, you just naturally go into sort of defensive position and drop deeper. But this is where Klopp, and I wanted, and a lot of people are sort of getting on his back. And I think some people have a right to get on his back to be more proactive in these situations. You know, if you're going to harass someone from the top... who's the best person to bring on? Bobby. If Bobby's on the subs bench, that means he's 90% fit. He must be 80% fit to be in the subs bench. So bring him on, press from the front, because he brought Salah, he brought on Salah, didn't he, through the middle? And that was the argument debate. Mane wanted to play through the middle, but Salah was, you know, there was some debate about Salah and Mane, about their roles, and that was what the argument was about. But I think his substitutions were 15 minutes too late, 15, 20 minutes too late. I think we should have gone like for like and really, really sort of closed up shop, used the Anfield crowd in a defensive situation. Do you know what I mean? Like sort of backs to the wall stuff. It was a chance to show it. I think it was nothing. I think there were nothing substitutions, to be honest with you. I don't think he changed the shape. They were just sort of reactionary. Just we might as well make some substitutions. There was no tactical thinking behind them, in my opinion.
There's a panic there, in my opinion, and you are allowed to criticise Klopp. You can criticise anyone you want, that's your opinion, but people don't like criticising Klopp or don't like criticising certain players. Listen, you said their natural instinct is to drop back. He was clearly dropping back when he changed Wijnaldum for Sturridge, but you have to remember, if you put Lallana and Mane on the pitch, Chelsea's natural reaction is to say, well, Lallana's going to hold the ball for them, and this guy is his lightning.
Yeah, but so again, we're not.
But this is what I'm saying. What I'm saying to you is, these two players push Chelsea 10 yards back, right? Regardless of how the game's gone and what Chelsea brought back on, Chelsea will step off 10 yards because they don't want Mane, Salah, even Oxlade-Chamberlain with his pace getting at them. And if we make that change on 75, we aren't inviting them on as much. Do you know that kind of way? But, look, I want to touch on one player, and it's something that's come up over the last couple of podcasts, and I don't know how you feel about him, but I just, and you, I probably do, but I want to get an update anyway. It's Jordan Henderson. And again, I watched him during the week, and again, I watched him yesterday. And for me, I can't see a future in the Liverpool team under Jurgen Klopp for Jordan Henderson. I really can't. And I think his days might be numbered. Matt, do you agree? Or do you think, no, you're way off the mark?
I think you're way off. And the reason mainly is not because what he is like on the field. I don't think there's many voices in the dressing room that can take over from him. We don't have anyone in that team. Maybe Lallana, he's a big voice, but there's no one in that team that will speak up. I mean, I'm not a fan of Hendo where he's playing. I like Hendo, but I like him further forward. 13-14 type season. People saying he can't play there now because of the ankle injury, but we don't know. Everyone's guessing. Everyone's guessing because he's getting played at that deep midfield role. If his future wants to be there, I want him replaced. But I still see him as a great sub. You got Jordan Henderson on the bench. That's a great sub to have. Do you know what I mean? We need a strong bench. You look at it, he might not want to sit on the bench, but who's going to buy him? He's the type of player. He's not going to be bought by Chelsea or City, Bayern Munich, Real, or anything like that, is he? He's the type of player that West Ham, Newcastle would go for. I'd have him on the bench. But I think, because he is a bit of a leader off the pitch and he's a great professional, he's all this type of stuff, in Klopp's eyes, I think he's got a bit of love for him. And that's why I don't think he'll be booted out anytime soon.
That just sounds to me like Lucas Mark too, to be perfectly honest with you. Yeah. He's great off pitch, he's a great laugh.
I'm surprised, Matt.
I'm
not saying it's the right thing. If it was my team, I mean, people know, I would have Emre Can in that position all day long above him, and have him fighting with Lallana and Ox and Chamberlain and Genie for the further forward position. Even Coutinho, he's on the form he's on now. I've been vocal on that. I'm not saying this is what I would do. This is what you asked me, what do I think he'll be gone? No, I don't. I think Klopp likes him because of the Lucas reasons. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. The only thing I will say is, and I think I say his days are numbered at the club, and the reason I say it is because Klopp needs him to be a certain type of player for him because of what's behind him. I.e. Lovren, Matip, or Klavan, or whoever it is. And he can't be that player at the moment. And I think if Liverpool were to sort out their centre-half problems, it may work, but you're looking to sort out centre-halves and defenders in order to make Henderson look a better player. And I just think, just watching him, he's played around so many times by teams, and it's starting to really frustrate me. Grizz, I could be way off the mark. He could be, you know, starting 11 next season and captain and untouchable. But I just think for what we need in the team, I just don't know if he offers it. I really don't.
I was when he started playing this new role. When he was given this new role, it was last season, wasn't it? Start of last season, and it came a kind of a surprise to everyone, didn't it? That Hendo's playing this sixth role because it was totally alien to him. And if we remember, we started off like a house on fire, didn't we? That was the season sort of we were playing some fantastic football and whatnot. So I was willing because it was a new role for him. He's learning it. It's a number six role in a Klopp team is in my opinion, one of the most important and one role where you need to be at sort of the brains of the team, the cleverest, you know, and I was willing to give Hendo time to learn that role. And he did well. But in my opinion, I think his injuries are the biggest reason for him not being able to sort of progress. I think he's regressed really, really badly. His mobility is... When we see him get run, players running past him, I don't remember Hendo ever being in that kind of position. He was always kind of sort of, he would make a niggly foul or something or harass players. He struggles to do that now, big time. I really, really don't think he has a future as a box to box. I know, Matt, you said you don't like him in the six, but you prefer him in a sort of more attacking midfield role. I get what you mean, but I don't think he can do that either, especially with Keita and sort of, you know, Goretzka likely to be coming in as well. Those positions, and then you've got Gini and Lallana in reserve for that box-to-box role. You know, as a six, you're right. At the moment, there is no alternative, but that's a sad state. I think the guy's really, really regressed badly, and I just don't see him getting any better, unfortunately, in that role.
Okay, well, look, we'll move on because we've only about 5 or 6 minutes left. And, lads, it's a month of Christmas. People are talking about Christmas shopping and Black Friday and fucking all sorts. And I was just... My wife is literally starting a list and fucking the length of it is unreal. But between the four of us, I suppose, Christmas comes around. We're not going to buy each other presents. We don't even fucking like each other. But if it came down to it and we weren't buying presents for each other, what would you buy? So, Grizz... We'll start with Grizz. So, Matt, if you're buying Grizz a present for Christmas, what are you buying him?
He doesn't celebrate, so...
yeah, but he does celebrate.
All right, mate, I'll get you a present. Well, we've all seen Grizz's feeble attempts at a diet. I think I've known Grizz about a year now, and I think he's been on about 17 diets. And every week, I get a different text message.
This one's
message.
Real, piece of shit.
I get different text messages going, have you heard of this diet? And it would be something like, you got to fill yourself up with as much chicken as you can and shit like that. So anyway.
The KFC diet, is it?
So just, I don't think he's very good at diet at the end of the day. So, because he's very self-conscious at the moment, I can tell. His wife's obviously had the word in his ear that he's put on a bit of a belly lately. Because all he goes on about is how he used to be a nice trim lad, and he sent me videos of him boxing about 2 years ago when he still...
He's slapping
bags. And to be honest with you, he was fat then. I don't know why I didn't see it. But he's not going to get anywhere of this diet. So for Christmas, I would get him a really, really fat friend. Because then all the attention's taken off him and people go, fucking hell, your mate's fat, isn't it? And you look a little bit slimmer. So you don't actually have to do any hard work. You look slimmer. And you'll actually have a mate as well. So a fat friend just to walk around with you.
It's untrue.
I love Matt. That's one of the reasons why I love Matt.
I'm good for you, mate.
If I was getting Grizz something for Christmas, it would be the pro version of Photoshop, because while he's doing a decent job with these gym photos and pictures on bridges in tracksuits and runners and stuff like that, he needs to touch up on the Photoshop in a little bit to make it more believable. He even brought characters into the situation and all this week, but I'm not even going into that. The pro version of Photoshop is what I get, Grizz.
Mine's quite simple. No, because I've been thinking about this, and I was actually going to send you out presents. No, no, for you guys. I was actually going to send you out presents.
No, hold on.
Yourselves now, right? After your suggestions for me.
I was being nice, you prick.
Because I actually... it's getting me a fat friend.
Yeah, so you don't look fat.
You shithead. I was actually going to send you something out, right? But you can shut... I actually got the missus shopping for you guys and got... Because for Gav, it's easy. And Gav's nice and cheap and cheerful because for Gav, I'd get trainers. Because I can get them in kids' sizes, and they're cheapest kids' sizes, aren't they? All right? So it's not a problem. Gav, anything...
Make sure they don't have laces, though, don't they?
Anything for Gav. Size 6, you know, this is telling me size 6. Size 6 are half price, near enough, like compared to adult prices, shoes. So I was going to just get Gav a nice pair of shoes, all right? Walking shoes. All right, so that's not... Matt, I was actually going to get you like a proper nice... Because like, I know you're not in UK at the moment, and so I know you don't trust the barbers out there, because I can see from the state of your hair, right, that you definitely haven't been to one for like at least 16 months.
I'm going for the most.
Yeah, Ron Jeremy. Because at the moment, guys, if anybody knows their porn, and I know a lot of them, a lot of you do, right? Ian was telling us about this character, because Ian watches a lot of porn, and so he knows about this Ron Jeremy, and he showed us a picture of Ron Jeremy now. I'm going to post a picture on Twitter, right? And if Matt grew his moustache for Movember for just a little bit more, he's a spitting image of Ron Jeremy at the moment. But I was actually going to send you a nice, proper, expensive pair of clippers, so you can get your hair fucking shaved now and again. You know what I mean? Because look at the state of you. Ian.
He does. He looks fucking homeless at times.
He does. He looks homeless. Now, I know he's had a rough weekend, you know, but...
He has it. Every weekend is rough, and it's fucking all brought on himself, like...
Do you know what? Because he sits against this wall, right, behind himself, right? And where I know his afro is getting bigger and bigger, I check the distance between the wall and his hair, and it's decreasing. Every week is decreasing. I can't see no wall behind him at the moment. It's like just his afro. I know you love Mo Salah.
Yeah. Fucking
hell, look what he's just done there. So he's grown a bit of a Mo Salah. So I was going to get him a bit of a grooming kit, so to speak. And yours, Gav, you know, a lovely pair of size sixes.
Gav's
is the easiest out of everyone. I'd get him one. Do you remember when you were a kid, you had them little plastic periscopes? And they were like blue and yellow and red. And so when he's talking to everyone, he can look them in the eyes. I'd like two little mirrors in them. So he could sellotape them around his head and just walk around talking to people in the eyes. Just for a day. This is what it's like to be a normal height.
Normal height.
Yeah, like not 3 foot.
Oh, bless.
Right, so look, Ian's not here, but we go with him. What are we getting Ian for Christmas? Matt, you're going out shopping for Ian. What are you getting him?
Well, first thing, obviously, is real Alexandra Burke tickets. So I'll get him that. Because he absolutely loved that concert last night. Honestly,
he had the night of his life.
The amount of WhatsApps we got, honestly, he was absolutely buzzing. And she wasn't even a good looky, like, she was white and blonde.
Yeah.
She's terrible. So I'd get him some real tickets. And then I'd get little Brian, his dog, I'd get him some earmuffs. Because for the next week, he's just going to be belting out Hallelujah around the house. That was their number
That's
one.
That's a great shout. Yeah, yeah, great shout. Get some stuff for Brian's ears. Because you're right. I wouldn't get Ian anything, to be honest with you. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to beat around the bush.
He's a bit of a prick, to be fair.
Yeah, he's a bit of a prick. And for him not to sort of jump on the show today.
He didn't even
turn up. I'm a bit disappointed. And he didn't even turn up today. So, I'm just going to give Ian... I missed this season.
Like, what type of prick doesn't turn up for a fucking pod?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, just because Alexander, but you know, I would actually buy him. Actually, he has been sent. I don't know if you know Matt and Gav. He's become a very big fan of. Do you know that Big Shaq?
Yeah.
Big what?
I know the guy. That,
yeah, I don't know what you call him—a grime artist, a rap artist, or whatever. That new sensation.
Skiddy pop pop.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that one. Right, who sings "Man's Not Hot"? So I think Ian's become a very, very big fan of him. So I think I'd get him tickets to sort of one of his gigs.
He'd love that.
Yeah, people don't know that, but Ian's a big, big fan of Big Shaq.
I don't know what I'd get Ian. I really don't. Like Matt and Grizz, you can
see. You're thinking the usual, but he's got all those blow up dolls and all that stuff. He's got all that. That's like, you know, he's got thousands of those type of things in his cellar. So I don't know where to go next for him. Do you know what I mean, Gab?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Like, when I look at Matt's weekends, I don't know, a pump out, probably fucking on a Saturday, just to pump his body fucking of everything he's put into it. probably get him that for Christmas. Colonic irrigation or something. Just something like that. Sorting out for the new year. Ian, I don't know. The only thing about Ian is when he's on WhatsApp and he decides to send you a voice message, 9 times out of 10 he drops the phone. So probably just a standard pair of rubber gloves just for that extra bit of grip. Because if I hear the fucking words, "Oh, sorry about that, I dropped the phone." He literally done it 5 times trying to do one message one day.
See, the thing is, he does that. You're absolutely spot on. That vibrator.
Does, yeah.
We often think he's using a vibrator.
Yeah.
It gives it that sound, doesn't it?
A pair of rubber gloves for Ian. They're multifunctional and he can send voice messages and that won't be an issue. Right, that's Christmas sorted. I just hope none of my fucking presents turn up, being honest with you. lads, that's been episode 13. Liverpool move on to Stoke on Wednesday night, I think it is. And let's just hope for a win. You know, get another 3 points on the board. We've been doing well the last couple of weeks. Bit unlucky yesterday.
We're winning the next five. We're winning all the games until we get to Arsenal.
Yeah.
Fact.
Okay, cool. I'll go with that. Grizz, thanks a million. Matt, thanks a million. I've been your host, Gav. Ian will be back next week with all the Alexandra book stories, pictures, at the whole walks. That's been episode 14. We'll talk to you next week, lads. Over and out.